Cancer survival rates are tied directly to whether or not the cancer spreads or metastasizes from its point of origin. The body's lymph node system is supposed to find and destroy cancerous cells. With some cancer patients, the lymph nodes do their job, but with others, the cancerous cells seize the advantage. Next on Access Minnesota, University of Minnesota researcher Dr. Akuri Sinha discusses cancer survival rates and the important role that lymph nodes play.
Access Minnesota. Issues that matter to you. Access Minnesota brings you the newsmakers and the stories that shape our everyday lives with analysis from University of Minnesota faculty experts. Access Minnesota is produced by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association in cooperation with the university's College of Liberal Arts and Radio K, KUOM. Now, here's Jim Dubois.
Our guest is Dr. Akuri Sinha. He's a professor of genetics, cell biology and development, and of urology at the University of Minnesota. He is also the co-author of a new study seeking to explain the difference in survival times among cancer victims. Dr. Sinha, welcome to Access Minnesota.
Thank you, Jim. I would first give thanks to people who have helped me. And this study could not have been done without the support of Research Service of the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. In addition, my wife has always helped me. My wife, Dorothy, has always helped, and we have been married for over 34 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Dr. Sinha, tell us how you got into this kind of research in the first place.
Well, we are a small number of people in the lab, and you have to work smart. If you don't work smart, you will be run over by a truck. And so I spend lots of time reading, and I read between the lines what people are actually saying, what they are publishing, and what they are not saying and not publishing. So when I started looking at it roughly 5-6 years ago, my study got interrupted because I had no funding, or the funding agencies wanted me to do something directly related to the money they had given for. And so that's a very difficult proposition. So I had to stop in the middle. Almost 3 years ago, I started on this project to see why nodes have not been looked at it. Pelvic nodes that are next to prostate, and that's what I study, prostate cancer. And surgeon, when takes out the prostate, they also take out the pelvic nodes. At least they used to. And then the pathologists look at it and they say, well, this patient has a positive node. That means cancer cells have spread to the nodes. And also, the pathologist will diagnose and report that cancer cells are not in the nodes. So there are positive and negative nodes, two kinds of nodes.
Well, Dr. Sinha, tell us what exactly a node is.
A node is a filtering device of lymphatic systems. The lymph nodes they contain immune cells, immune surveillance cells, and macrophages. And when cancer cells escape from prostate, they can go two routes or three routes. One route is, about 70 to 80% cases, they go via nodes. It's a lymphatic system, and there are node swellings in there where there is accumulation of lymphocytes, macrophages, and other cells. And other system is blood vascular system, hematogenous system. And there, the cells can get directly into the blood system, and then they can go to bones, pelvic bones, other organs of the body. And that's what happens. It is very difficult to find samples of the other organs normally until it is quite late. But node samples are always found because they are taken out when the prostate is taken out. And this gives some estimate of how aggressive cancer is.
We know that cancer patients don't die from the tumors themselves. It's metastasis that kills them. Tell us more about that process.
Well, what happens, the pathologists say that you have a positive node. Basically, they don't look beyond that. That's a snap decision. And that tells the patient that, your time is limited. but that is not accurate. What is accurate is roughly 70% of the patients with positive node, like prostate cancer positive nodes, will survive over 10 years. Only about 25 to 30% of the patients with positive node will survive less than 5 years. Fortunately, prostate cancer is one of those cancers that patient really survive much longer than, say, brain cancer or lung cancer or pancreatic cancer. So it's one of the good cancers. Nobody should have a cancer, but if you are going to have it, you have a good chance you will survive over 10 years, maybe even 20 years.
Well, doctor, after cancer surgery, pathologists examine the lymph nodes near the original tumor. What specifically will they be looking for in that process?
They will be looking for if prostate cancer cells have gone into the nodes. And nodes are supposed to be fixed with immune surveillance cells like lymphocytes of several kinds, macrophages that they destroy cells. And so they are supposed to destroy the cancer cells in the lungs. So what we did, when I discovered that the pathologists are not looking at it, and I'm telling you, pathologists not only in Minneapolis but worldwide. I've had correspondence with Karolinska Hospital also, and I was shocked and surprised they don't look at it either. In Cornell University, and I talked with some, I visited Mayo Clinic, I talked with pathologists there, and I'm just shocked that why pathologists not look at it. I did ask the pathologists why. And let me tell you why. They tell me, each one of them have told me there is no time.
Really, why is that a factor? Why is there no time? Any idea why they would use that particular explanation?
Unfortunately, what has happened, the funding systems do not fund the studies that are not very sexy or high-tech, okay? And that is a problem. And just saying that you have a positive node is, in my mind, not adequate. It is not giving the full information. And furthermore, node has information. What information they have is whether there is immune surveillance. Immune surveillance means whether the lymphatic cells and macrophages are killing cancer cells that have gotten into the nodes and whether they are not killing those cells. So what we looked at those cells that are being killed. We examined some 32 nodes. We have examined much more, but we published 32 because that is what we have complete data of. And so we found that some nodes have lots of dead cancer cells that have gone to the nodes. Others did not. And after I analyzed the data, I found that it is very simple test to do. Pathologists could look at it and say, look, you have lots of dying cells. Pathologists could also look at it that you don't have many dying cells. And they could give some assessment. True, it has not been clinically tested. It has not been in clinical trials so far because nobody has looked at it. You know, we are the first to look at it, and so how could there be clinical trial? And my agenda is to have the funding agency set up a system that they start looking at it now, at least give some assessment to the treating physicians whether or not this person should have aggressive treatment or should have a little less aggressive treatment.
We're talking with Dr. Akuri Sinha. He is a professor of genetics, cell biology, and urology at the University of Minnesota. He's also the co-author of a new study seeking to explain the difference in survival times among cancer victims. Dr. Sinha, your paper looks to explain why some cancer patients live for many years after metastasis while others do not. Tell us why that's so.
It is because lymphatic nodes, they are supposed to provide immunosurveillance, and that means they are able to destroy cancer cells that have gone to an organ that it should not have gone. And that's what it does. But unfortunately, they don't destroy all the cells. Now, we have looked at a set of nodes. Now, there are many nodes in a series. There could be one node, could be 10 nodes. They all could have cancer cells, or just could one have cancer cells. So the study needs to be done to see how many of those cells were destroyed in how many nodes. So that needs to be done, but it is a very laborious study. Somebody has to do it. I have no resources to do it. And so that study is begging to be looked at. And this is where we looked at it, and I have talked with pathologists as well, and they have not looked at it. And it is very unfortunate because, see, this is a real life and death situation for patients. Now, we have looked at it prostate, and we have surmised, we have postulated that this will be true for all solid organ cancers. Let me tell you what solid organ cancers are. They are prostate, breast, colon, lungs, pancreas, brain, you name it. Anything that is not leukemia or lymphoma. So those, they all have nodes. Like, for example, a woman going to a breast cancer surgery, the surgeon will take out the nodes. They also say positive and negative node. And if this is not being looked at prostate, I can assure you they are not being looked at other tumors as well. And so, but that needs to be further investigated. And I don't normally study colon or lungs, or so I can't investigate. I think I will leave it to experts to do.
In your research, Dr. Sinha, you saw two different kinds of metastatic tumor cells, those that were at least partially vulnerable to the immune system, those that were not. Was there anything different that you could find that would make it possible to spot this from, say, the outset instead of being forced to wait and see how things eventually developed?
We have a study in progress. We are looking into the makeup of genes in those population of cells in the nodes. And we are trying to establish which of the cells died and what were the genes associated with those cells. We are also looking into the genes of those cells that did not die. And our goal is to take this information from node to the primary tumor, which is in this case is prostate, and see if we can pick up that in the primary tumor. And if we can pick up the primary tumor, the good thing is that when a pathologist makes a biopsy, he should be able to use that information and should be able to tell even before any other treatment is done. Now, let me tell you, Jim, that surgery is one treatment, radiation is another one, chemotherapy is another one, hormonal therapy another one. There are many kinds of treatment. Some people don't want to have surgery. And so this information will help all those who are not having prostate surgery.
Dr. Sinha, does the medical community have any idea whether the ability to fight off cancer is due to genetic factors or perhaps the severity of the cancer itself? Are some cancers just inevitably more survivable?
Well, some cancers are more survivable. And what we need to do more than what we have done. As I said earlier, we have to stop the study based on hype and a study based on making data look good. And that is what the problem is. Let me give you an example. Dr. Don Gleason was a pathologist at VA, and I worked with Don Gleason for 20-plus years. He reported pathology system, Don Gleason grading system, in 1966 at the VA. He started out looking fresh. There were lots of grading systems before, but he discarded all of them and started looking at it. why that thing has survived? Because he was very thorough. I'm not Don Gleason. I'm not Don Gleason by any stretch of imagination, but what I'm looking at is I learned from him to be smart. And smart is to look into the holes people are not looking into.
We're talking with Dr. Akuri Sinha. He is a professor of genetic cell biology and development and of urology at the University of Minnesota. He's the co-author of a new study that seeks to explain the difference in survival rates among cancer victims. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Access Minnesota will return after these messages. You're listening to Access Minnesota. Now, here's Jim Dubois.
Our guest is Dr. Akuri Sinha. He's a professor of genetics, cell biology and development, and of urology at the University of Minnesota. He's also the co-author of a new study that seeks to explain the difference in survival rates among cancer victims. You had mentioned earlier in the interview that you felt not enough research is being devoted to this particular issue. Understanding the process of this whole issue seems so fundamental to our ability to stop cancer, but you've noted that we still don't know much about it. Is this a question of lack of funding? Why is this so?
Jim, let me give you an example. President Kennedy came in 1960. And at that point, Soviet Union, USSR, had already sent a mission to space. He focused the nation for a space race. And his focus was such a big bang that there is no USSR anymore. It is in many pieces. President Nixon declared war on cancer. And he funded it. The war on cancer was passed by law. And ever since then, the National Cancer Institute has been managing the war on cancer. And I would say I don't want to criticize, but I'm going to, because they have not focused their studies. They have gone on studies that are not of immediate benefit to patients. They are not relevant to patients. Let me give you an example. There are roughly 500 genes involved in prostate cancer, and there are roughly 500 genes involved in normal prostate cancers. And it is not easy to decipher which of those 500 genes are good or which of them are bad. And I can tell you that there is no therapy at this stage in existence that will destroy even a third of those 500 genes. So we are focusing on something long-term. But in the meantime, we have forgotten that there are real people dying today. Let me give you an example. In 1971, there were 635,000 cases were in the USA. Some 335,000 died from that disease. In 2012... there are 1.6 million or 1.6 million people who were diagnosed cancer, and 577,000 died. And this is from a journal called CA. Clinicians refer that journal. So what has happened? That has cancer war began in 1971, and by 2012, the cancer war has been lost because 2.5 times more people are dying and being diagnosed. Another study that showed that between 73 and 1999, the overall incidence of cancer increased by 24%, even after adjusting for population. And this I am talking just about the United States. I'm not talking about the worldwide data. So time has come that the NCI or John Q. Public should ask, why is this that cancer is increasing and we are paying for it? We have spent, John Q. Public has spent roughly $400 billion. What have they gotten? 2.5 times more cancer. So this is a tragedy in my mind.
Well, Dr. Sinha, you mentioned the lack of focus in some of the research. What about this, too? We know there are many, many organizations that have a stated purpose of battling cancers of all kinds. These are organizations that raise funds, presumably to help patients and also to go to research. Does the fact that we're seeing so many individual efforts to combat cancer perhaps dilute the greater efforts? Any thoughts on that?
Let me give you an example. There is an element in every cancer application today, innovation. What happens that the funding agencies, public or private, they put out that in application you must write what is innovative in this particular project. And everybody spins out a few sentences of that this project will do this, that, and others. Now, ask the question. This project has been decided by committees. How often the committee will come out with something that is very innovative? What has happened that today the committees decide, public or private, which is a hot area to research and which is not. So they put a part of money in that hot area and they fund it, and everything else goes unfunded. And this is an example that the pathology has not been looked into nodes and into the genes in those nodes. And many other places, you know, I can go on and on. I've worked in this area for a long time, so I know the loopholes. And that is my strength. I look for, we are very small labs. We have essentially no money, but we try to work smart.
Dr. Sinha, where do you go from here? What research in this area is next for you and your colleagues?
Well, Jim, let me tell you, this area we have looked at it, and we are right now looking into which of these patients survived for over 10 years and which did not. That study is in progress. I have written half the paper. The other half the paper I will write soon. And hopefully, you know, I don't work full-time. I work part-time only, and mostly it's all essentially all volunteer work. I volunteer every day 4 to 5 hours to get this thing out. I was so surprised that I had to go back and dig into the literature for almost a year to see why somebody has not worked into it. And once I found it, I said, well, I'm just shocked. So there are many areas. Let me give you another example. What we are working on right now. Patients are given chemotherapy or variety of therapies. The purpose of those therapies are to kill cancer cells. And I can tell you, it is an assumption that they kill cells. Nobody has gone to look at it, which cells are being killed. You know, we published a paper some 12 years ago. We devised a method to deliver the drug directly to cancer cells. We couldn't proceed further because the drug has to be manufactured by an approved lab. We didn't have money. We couldn't get money. So I abandoned it. So there are lots of things. I'm not trying to promote myself, but all I'm trying to tell you that there are areas that needs to be focused, and they are not being focused.
Since your focus of research is on prostate cancer, I do have to ask you this question. There's been a lot of controversy about the PSA test. We hear, get it, a great idea, or don't get it, not a great idea. We hear sometimes that, well, there are a lot of false positives and you may not like the side effects of the treatments. What is your take on that, doctor?
I would say that I am in favor of PSA testing. I know of no marker that can correctly identify 70% of people, 70 to 75% of people correctly. A single marker. Now, you should understand, Jim, that the diagnosis is not based just on PSA. There are a variety of other parameters that are looked into. How much PSA is there? So, in my opinion, I think the PSA has saved more lives than any other marker. It has missed some, and there are some diagnoses made that are false. But then there are checks and balances that should be looked at. I would advocate that anyone who is over 50 should have a PSA test, although I know that the committee came out with a recommendation PSA is not necessary. But there are criticisms and there are now published papers that show that was a mistake.
We've been talking with Dr. Akuri Sinha. He's a professor of genetics, cell biology and development, and urology at the University of Minnesota. He's also the co-author of a new study that seeks to explain the difference in survival times among cancer victims. And Dr. Sinha wants to acknowledge the wonderful work done by the VA Medical Center. He's been collaborating with them very closely over the years in his research. Dr. Sinha, thank you so much for joining us on Access Minnesota.
Jim, thank you very much for giving me this chance to air my views. I do want to reiterate that without Minneapolis VA Medical Center, this research could not have been possible. And without the help of lots of people, which I have acknowledged in my published paper, research could not have been done. And, of course, without the help of my wife of 34 years, Dorothy, this could not have been done. So this work has been done only with the help of many people and many collaborators, and I am very thankful to all of them.
Access Minnesota will return after these messages. You're listening to Access Minnesota. Now, here's Jim Dubois.
We invite you to join in on the conversation. Visit us at accessminnesotaonline.com. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. In this highly partisan political atmosphere where compromise is an evil word, Minnesota's own Walter Mondale stands out in sharp contrast. Throughout his political career, the former vice president earned a reputation for bridging ideological gulfs and mustering support for legislation from both sides of the aisle. On the next Access Minnesota, a look at Mondale's legacy of public service through the eyes of Dave Hoggy, a contributor to Mondale's memoir, The Good Fight, A Life in Liberal Politics. That's all for this week. Thanks for listening.
Access Minnesota, issues that matter to you. Join us again next week as we bring you the newsmakers and stories that shape our everyday lives. Access Minnesota is produced by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association in cooperation with the University of Minnesota's College of Liberal Arts and Radio K, KUOM.